You've been dealing with this for, you know, over 35 years. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, from what I understand, it used to not be called human trafficking, right? It's like, what did you used to refer to it as?
So I tell you, like, Victims Resource Center works with victims of violent crimes.
Right.
So we work a lot with adults who've been sexually assaulted, kids who've been sexually assaulted, adults who are sexually abused as children. It's not new, because I've been working with victims for a long time. It's just that we only see kind of what TV and Hollywood shows us what trafficking is, or what we read in the paper, but we don't really look at what it is. And it's about force, fraud, and coercion.
Being exposed to what you're exposed to, I'm sure it takes a toll on you too. It's not easy. I mean, what's that like?
Sometimes I think that when you get through the day, like, did I make a difference in that? Because there's things I can't change. So, I mean, homicide is really hard because you can't change any of that. But if there's something that you can do to help make their day a little bit easier, or somebody that they can listen to, then the day was a success.
It still hits. I don't miss it. It's go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost known. And I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like a stroke shimbo. And I ain't too close. It's Joe Smogos. And I'm on my grind. That is all the time. I do not do breaks. That's right. I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. And a little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bad. But I still ask, the boy got skills. I don't need her. I don't need him. I don't need help with me. I got this. I can sing songs. I can spit raps. And I can do both. Even do this. Word.
This episode is brought to you by Anthracite Pallet Solutions. Need reliable, durable pallets to keep your business moving? At Anthracite Pallet Solutions, we specialize in new and used 48x40 wooden pallets. Whether you're shipping, storing, or stacking, we offer high-quality pallets that keep your operations running smoothly. With our own fleet of trucks and trailers, we deliver on time, every time. And if warehouse space is a concern, our drop trailer services have you covered. From custom orders to large-scale deliveries, we're here to meet your every need with top-notch customer service and unbeatable prices. We're currently shipping within 2 hours of Scranton, Pennsylvania, including Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Call us today at 570-606-9206 or inquire online at anthracitepallet.com and let us handle your pallet solutions. Anthracite Pallet Solutions, built to last. Designed to move. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit SweatTent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's SweatTent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On The Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at fitafnutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at fitafnutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game. You know, one of the things that really sparked my interest, we were talking a little bit before we, you know, we started recording, but it was, you know, a few weeks ago, it was an article in the Times Leader from Bill O'Boyle that really sparked my interest more than usual, I'll say, in the whole human trafficking conversation. I saw the article from the Times Leader, and obviously, you know, you were quoted several times in there, and it's a great article. I mean, there's just... Okay. There's a lot of information. It's really good. When I saw it, I was like, wow, there's being some attention brought to this. You know, you see every once in a while, there's a little blip here or there about this, you know, in the media locally here, but not that much, not that often, or at least not in to the depth of what that article was, which was, I just want to make sure I get the date right. It was January 11th. But yeah, so I, uh, I took the link and I posted it on my Facebook page. And I think I forget what I even said, but I just said like, hey, I think, you know, this is so important. We need to draw more attention to this, blah, 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 whatever. Just trying to be supportive and share the message. I had a lot of people that were, you know, that commented on it, that, you know, were supportive. And I think like over 100 people shared the post. And, you know, but then I did have some people that, you know, that were also that left negative comments and or people like challenging it and saying like, almost like it doesn't even exist. And of course me being me, I'm like, well, do you live under a rock? But yeah, I think, you know, and again, even when I was going back and forth, I was, you know, responding to some, you know, everybody's comments. And then I said, well, you know what? I'm going to reach out to Tammy. I said, and I'll have her on. And I said, we'll settle this debate once and for all. Not that it's really a debate, but you know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, so I just, you know, like I said, I think this this topic, it's a very pressing issue, you know, not just in our area, but just in this whole country or the whole world for that matter. And you've been dealing with this for, you know, over 35 years. Mm-hmm. And back in the day, from what I understand, it used to not be called human trafficking, right? It's like, what did you used to refer to it as?
So I tell you, like, Victims Resource Center works with victims of violent crimes.
Right.
So we work a lot with adults who've been sexually assaulted, kids who've been sexually assaulted, adults who were sexually abused as children, but victims of other violent crimes such as robbery, burglary,
so it's homicide, everything. Yeah.
I think probably around 2015, 16, I'm going to guess, is that we gave a name to it, you know, and it was like human trafficking. I'm like, it's not new because I've been working with victims for a long time. It's just that we only see kind of what TV and Hollywood shows us what trafficking is or what we read in the paper, but we don't really look at what it is. And it's about force, fraud, and coercion. All right. So when I heard what it was, and it wasn't about people being abducted, and it wasn't about people coming from across borders, you don't need to cross any borders for it to be trafficking, but it was somebody who was making some sort of profit from someone. So when I think back to my adult survivors from years and years and years ago, I can remember some of them saying to me, my grandfather would take me to the bar, and he would sell me in the back room. And I would call that child sexual abuse. I would call that a lot of different things. Mm. But I didn't say human trafficking.
Right.
You know, I've worked with women. I've done some, you know, programs in different, you know, more high-risk populations, such as like the homeless shelter, drug and alcohol. And I've had women say to me, you know, that they were really embarrassed by prostitution or the drug charges or whatever it might be. And I thought, you know, I've worked long enough with adult survivors. There's a connection between child abuse and addiction. And at some point, maybe you run out of money and you do what you need to do. My part, well, that was an assumption on my part. It wasn't a judgment. I just thought people were just trying to survive. And they said, you know, I said, can you tell me a little bit more about the prostitution? I don't call that prostitution. It's sex work. But actually what they're talking about is sex trafficking. And they would say, well, my partner, who they were in a domestic violence situation, I either had to come back out with the money or I had to come back with the drugs. So I did what I needed to do. That's trafficking. And it happens way more than what you would possibly think. And it does happen to the kids. And it does start at an early age. But we have a whole community of people that are being trafficked right here. And I think it's hard for people to open their eyes because they don't want to see it.
And I think people don't understand it, too. I mean, I think it's both. I think a lot of people, I'm the opposite. A lot of people just ignore conversations like this because they're, and I get it. If there's trauma involved and it's a conversation that somebody can't have because of a trauma, I totally get that. But what I don't like is when people are just ignorant to the situation and just like want to pretend like it doesn't exist or don't want to talk about it. Like, I don't mind having the hard conversations. I like having the hard conversations because I think it's important. I think that's the only way to make progress and whatever it is. It doesn't have to just be, you know, this. You know, topic specifically, but explaining it to people and really breaking it down so that people can really understand it. Because I think one of the biggest things is people just don't understand as much as, you know, and them saying like that it doesn't exist or it's not real may just be them being unaware, you know? So I hope, you know, it's my goal, I think today, as I'm sure it is yours too, to help people really understand like what it is and how it happens and who it happens to. And it's not, it doesn't, it's not just here, it's not just there, it's everywhere. And it's like, it's such a common occurrence, it's scary. So take me back, like, you know, you've been, you know, again, Victims Resource Center is more than just human trafficking. And I know we just said that, but yeah, you've been involved in doing this type of work for such a long time. So you probably have stories and a, you know, just a vast of knowledge and experience and everything. And I'm you know, eager to hear some of that. But what even made you get into this line of work to begin with?
Victims Resource Center?
Yeah.
I think that when I was going through school, actually like through high school and grade school, I was wanting to be a social worker. I just didn't know what it was. I thought I would work for children and youth. I did an internship there, and I'm like, that's not what I wanted to do. And then I found, and this is back in the day, it's not online, in the newspaper, an ad for this position. It was for a counselor advocate at the time.
Okay.
And I just really wanted to do it. And I had no idea what it would lead to or what it would even be like. But I can tell you that I actually love this job. You know, sometimes I don't like the staff meetings, but other than that, you know, and the paperwork that comes with it, but there's never a day that I hate going to work. So I found where I belonged.
Being exposed to what you're exposed to, I'm sure it takes a toll on you too. It's, I'm sure it's not easy. I mean, you know, you deal with basically tragedies probably almost on a daily basis.
I do.
What's that like?
Sometimes I think that when you get through the day, like, did I make a difference in that? Because there's things I can change. So, I mean, homicide is really hard because you can't change any of that. But if there's something that you could do to help, I know we're not talking mainly about homicide, but if you could do something that would make their day a little bit easier or somebody that they could listen to, offer them additional services, help them get some of their needs met, then the day was a success. That if you take a hotline call and you spend 20 minutes with, you know, a sexual assault victim who's hysterical or afraid, and you can help them create some sort of safe space to be in, if it's emotional or physical, be able to get them to where they need to be, then it was a success. And I've had the opportunity to watch people heal, which is amazing, you know, and it's an honor to walk through, you know, what people might think is horror for them. It's an honor for them to share that stuff with me, and I can walk through that pain with them, if that makes sense.
So take me back. I mean, again, like, you know, going back to like your earlier days, I mean, just, you know, looking back on your career, I mean, was it what you thought it would be?
No, in the beginning, I worked a lot with adult survivors because there wasn't many professionals that were working with adults that were sexually abused as children. We actually at one time had a waiting list to provide those services because they were all referred to us, and sexual assault. That was mainly, I mean, we had other crimes that we would do occasionally, but it was mainly sexual assault and adult survivors and children who were sexually abused. And then it just started turning. And as crime changes and it increases, like, we've worked more and more with homicide. I never thought in my life that we would have a homicide survivors group at our agency. You know, that was something that happened in different cities. But now it's here.
So kind of like over the years, like, it's just kind of like there's been not new crimes because they're not really new.
Right.
It's just they may have just a different term, different terminology, right? But you've kind of seen like different patterns, different like trends. I mean, how has that evolved over time?
Like I said, the crime has gone up. So there's an increase in requests for services, or there's more and more victims out there that I hope that even with what we're doing today, we'll let them know that there is somebody they can call and talk to.
How do you reach these people?
Hopefully by what you're doing.
Right,
but we go out in the community. So we're big in the community. We're part of the hospital. So we're not part of the hospital. We're part of the hospital.
We have like
protocol.
A partnership with.
Right. So we go out and we remind them. But if a sexual assault victim presented at the ER or a trafficking victim presented at the ER, we're part of the protocol. The ER would call us to come out and provide support. Try to reach out with law enforcement. Some law enforcement will make referrals. You could reach out to some of the DAs. Some, you know, the DAs will make referrals, but also out in the community, going to social service agencies, doing a lot of stuff in what I would call, you know, some of the high-risk populations. I mean, there's homeless shelters. Many of those people came from some sort of trauma before they got there. I'm going to tell you 99%. It doesn't mean they were sexually abused. Chances are they could have been, or they grew up in domestic violence, or they're fleeing domestic, but they're somewhere along the way. So we go out and we do educational groups at high risk. A lot of drug and alcohol, I'll try to get in there, do stuff trainings with their staff, but also ask to meet with the client so that they're aware of our services, but also, you know, bring up really hard topics with them, sexual assault and trafficking.
So how does it start? Like, let's just really break it down. Like, and I know it could be anyone of any age. I know there's you know, probably various ways that somebody can, I'll say, become a victim to human trafficking, but what do you typically see?
It happens to males and females. Get more disclosures on females. But they range anywhere from 19 to 55.
How much, like, are you really seeing? Because, again, one of the, you know, obviously the article from the Times Leader did say, and I forget, like, where Pennsylvania ranked, but it was really high. It was really high. It was definitely in the top 10, right?
Yeah, we're at number nine.
Nine. Okay, I was going to say, I thought it was nine, but I'm trying. I didn't want to screw it up. But, like, people, I think a lot of people's reactions, again, like, locally, when I shared that the article on Facebook, a lot of people just, like, were like, there's no way. There's no way.
I didn't make that number up.
Right, I know. I'm not making any statistics up for anything,
you know?
That's what I said, too.
What we write. So when I started, when I became part of the task force, and I think that might have been, like, 2018, We were number 11.
Even then?
Yeah. But then we moved up to number 9, which means it got higher. So where that's ranked at is where sometimes when reports and there's arrest made. But then there's another section that I do know, and I know it from law enforcement, and it comes from the tip lines, and it comes from the human trafficking hotline. Like, where are the calls coming in from?
Yeah, where do they go? Who's taking this? Who's fielding them?
Well, there's the human trafficking hotline that fields them out, but also there is the Pennsylvania State Police. So the PSP has a tip line.
Okay.
And I can find that number for you at
the end. Of course, yeah.
But you can make a report of somebody, and they respond. So from what I know, I started to figure out what the hotspots were, and they were like, okay, so Philly made sense to me.
Sure.
Pittsburgh, King of Prussia. And then I found like Lancaster and I'm like, what?
Yeah, I saw Bloomsburg too.
Right, Bloomsburg and then Altoona. I mean, the only thing I know there is Mallow Cups.
Yeah.
And then, right?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
But Wilkes-Barre, Scranton.
Right.
So part of it is about demand. When I say it's not about crossing borders, but victims in those hotspots, it's where the demand is.
And explain that, the demand. Like, how would there be a need for a demand of this?
So I think when I first opened my eyes, I did meet a woman. She was a victim of trafficking, and she was from another state, and it was, you know, upstate, and it was a, you know, a big populated city. And I said to her, what are you doing here? She said, that's because this is where they brought me. And like me, like not knowing, I go, why'd they bring you here? She said, because this is where the money is. This is Wilkes-Barre.
And wait, you already knew she was being trafficked?
I already knew she was trafficked because law enforcement made a referral.
Got it. Okay.
And I was trying to help her get the resources that she needed.
Right. Okay. So what did she say?
I said to her, what are you doing here? Like, why did you come from a big city, like in another state? Because
yeah.
I'm
like,
not
why
even
here?
Like,
yeah.
Why are you coming here?
Yeah.
And she said, because this is where they brought me. I said, but why would they bring you here? Like, I knew we had trafficking. I just didn't. My eyes wasn't open either.
Right.
And she said, because this is where the money is. And I go, and this is where the buyers are.
So how does it work? So I know it's like sounds silly, but
no.
Like, you know, again, like I understand it. I think probably a little bit better than most people, but obviously you understand it,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably the best. So like, how does that work? And when you say like the buyers are here, because like, you know, it's like there's, you know, like who's buying? Like, and it sounds ridiculous to even have these words coming out. Like, who's buying and selling people?
And that's why I said about the demand. And I don't want to go off on a tangent, but it's like we need to focus sometimes on the buyers. Because if I didn't have drug addicts, I wouldn't have drug dealers. And if I didn't have people who bought people, I wouldn't have people who sold people. It would be that simple to me. But who are the buyers? They're from all walks of life. And we know them. If they're saying that they're here, they're just not talking about it at grandma's table at Thanksgiving. We all probably know somebody.
You think it's that common?
It's that common? Because if she's telling me she's brought here, and I know how many victims that I've met in this county alone, they're here.
I believe it.
I'm not saying they're not passing through from Jersey or something.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But they're here.
Yeah.
And they know how to access and they know how to find them.
So like these buyers, are they people that are permanently here, or are they people that move? Or like,
they could be from anywhere, but they're in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because our hotels are loaded with it.
Like, what's because like I hear like a lot of the hotspots are like these like some of these motels like around here, and I don't want to name names unless
no,
you.
I can later.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to misspeak, right?
But they're in Wilkes-Barre. We have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people are staying and living, and sometimes those victims are placed in those rooms, and they don't leave that room.
At all.
No. And here's the part, and I know I might be going around in circles or just not staying where we're supposed to be, but it's like, I think that when we think about what trafficking victims, and we think people that are, like, abducted, we think that they're tied up and they can't leave. No, they're out and about. We see them.
They're just going with their everyday, but just in a different, they're living in a totally different world.
But it's about being controlled. With some victims, and they'll say they're not victims because they did it.
Like, do some victims think that they're not victims?
They do. Because they don't even recognize what it is.
Wow.
You know, until you, like, kind of talk to them about consent and cooperation. Well, I'm the one who went to that room. I'm the one who did that. I'm the one who got in that car.
And what would that instance be like? Like you said, okay, somebody got in a car. Somebody went to that room. Like, what were they doing to begin with that you know, they got into this situation.
Okay.
How does it happen?
So the one woman she has a history of child sexual abuse. She was an alcoholic. Eventually she upped it, started using drugs. She had a job. She had an apartment. She had a car. But when you're using, it's really hard to keep going to work. And before you knew it, she lost her job. And then when you lose your job, you lose your car. you lose your apartment. So she's out on the streets.
So she has like nothing now.
She's nothing. And so she's out there and she's not really used to being out there, but she's out there. And a man and woman came up to her and said, if you come with us, it's not going to be safe here, but if you come with us, I'll give you a place to stay, somewhere that's warm, someplace that's safe, some food, clothes, the drug of your choice. She got in the car.
And this was just, she was just approached like what, like where she like just she was outside
on the
somewhere?
Yeah, she was out on the street and she was homeless.
And she just got approached.
Yeah. So and it's she like was these... right. It wasn't safe and it's getting cold out.
Yeah.
And when you have nobody, and
she had,
they have
she
nobody.
She had no choice.
So she got in the car, not really knowing what it was going to be. But she said, but I got in the car. Mm-hmm. I said, but that's not what the deal was. Somebody was going to put you in a room and that you were going to be in there were between 10 and 20 people a day, if not more, you know, and they did give her the drug supply. You know, and she would talk about she knew when it was going to start because they would come in with the drugs.
What kind of drugs?
I don't know what the drugs were. Oh, it was whatever, because I'm really terrible with drug stuff.
Yeah.
But it was whatever jacked her up for the day, you know, until she did what they needed her to do. And then.
And was this a victim of like a prostitution? It was like ring. Is that?
It was just her.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean there wasn't other people, but it was her by herself.
Okay.
In that situation. But there's a lot of money in that.
I hear like, you know, like the one quote, and it may have been in the article or whatever, but like I hear this all the time is, you know, whenever somebody talks about human trafficking, you know, one of the things that's said most common is, you know, human trafficking, unlike drugs or something else, can only be sold once, and humans can be sold over and over and over and over again.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
Right?
And like that's like, so it's unbelievable.
It's constantly money coming in.
So it could be like a number of things, right? It could be prostitution, right? Like what else? Like what are the other, like, I don't know, like that they become victim to, like that they're being sold for? Like, is it labor? Is it prostitution?
There's labor trafficking and then there's sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That they can be. But see, I think they've kind of upped the ante on things that they can do with trafficking victims. When you got control and you could keep them doing this, then they can do other stuff. And then they're the ones that end up in trouble. And let's even just think about sex trafficking in general. It is the only crime. It's the only situation in the United States where we arrest the victim. They get arrested for prostitution and somebody else is selling them and somebody else is buying them, but they get arrested for prostitution. But we can up that and we can make more money. Like trafficking, when you think about international crimes, it used to be drug trafficking, arms trafficking, sex trafficking, or human trafficking is what I mean. Mm-hmm. Human trafficking moved up to two because you can make more money on it, but also you could have them do other things. Like if I'm selling drugs, I can send you also to sell the drugs too. You could deliver them. You'll get the rap for that. I want something at that store. You're going to go get it for me. You could get the retail theft. I'm in the car. Cops pull me over. You could put those drugs on you.
So there's just little things every day, all day long. That's like you do that.
And the less consequences to the trafficker because they're the trafficking victims are the ones that get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
What are they? There's no, yeah. Like, so if I was driving down the road and I had drugs in the back of my car, cop pulls me over, I'm going to jail. He finds guns laying in the backseat. I'm going to jail. But if you have somebody sitting next to you,
who says, oh, they're mine.
Oh, here's your speeding ticket. Have a good day.
And obviously these victims, you know, from what I understand, you know, in situations like that, they know that they basically have to take the fall for it. Because if not, then there'll be
consequences. Yes.
And it could be bad, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, these victims, I mean, you know, in situations like that, I'm sure, again, you've probably seen it 10 times over where, you know, an arrest is made. And then they go, and whether they do time or not or whatever it is, mm-hmm. they get back out and then they go back. They usually go back, right?
They go back or they come and get them because they know they got out of jail
because
they're pretty clever.
How do they know? Like, how do they keep tabs on all this
stuff? I think they know people that are coming in and out. And I think that there's ways to find, there are ways to find out when somebody's getting released and they're really good at that.
It's crazy.
And I wouldn't believe, if you would have told me this 5 years ago, I would have said, no. I mean, there's issue. There is sex trafficking. I know that that happens. I know that I met victims a long time ago. If I thought there was this many here, I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't. So, like the first year that I really started doing this. Now, remember, we're working with victims of all violent crimes.
Right. So you have like your day is full of like
all different crimes.
A thousand other things.
Right.
Yeah.
So I got one or two. And I was pretty happy with that. I found one or two victims. I mean, we didn't go out looking for them. But you mean like
sure.
I got them to receive services.
Right.
And then maybe the next year there was like 10. And then the next year, this is this county, and the next year there was like 25. It started going up to the point that we applied for a grant to hire for a victim advocate, human trafficking advocate, just to help with those crimes and to help provide those services. I think last year at the end of December, there were 69. And those are the ones that we reached. I know that there's more.
And there's more that just haven't either spoken up or haven't asked for help or just maybe weren't arrested yet or whatever the case
exactly.
is. Exactly. So one of the things that, there was this one individual that left, you know, one of the comments on my Facebook post, and it was, they said, I've called the local police departments and I asked them and they said that there's no such reports. There's no reports. It's not happening. And my response was, well, they're probably not going to tell you about ongoing investigations, number one. And, you know, and then, you know, she still just went on to, you know, defend her, you know, her position. And I'm just like, well, I'm like, I don't believe that. So, mm-hmm. Do you have something to say about that? Because like, that's just...
Well, first of all, not all of them report to law enforcement. And my role and our job is to provide support. And our philosophy is based on empowerment. I'm not going to say you need to make a report to the police. I hope someday you do.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm not going to
do that. So when people come to you, it may never even be filed with the police.
No. But sometimes they're not believed. Or sometimes they're interviewed and people aren't asking the right questions. And I'm not saying anything bad about law enforcement. Because when I talk about all the human trafficking here, in the same time, we want them to work on getting, you know, working for, you know, making arrest on human trafficking and interviewing more trafficking victims. But in reality, domestic violence didn't go down and homicide didn't go down and sexual assault didn't go down. And I don't think we have a lot more, right? We don't have a lot more law enforcement. So on top of the stuff that they're doing day to day, you know, another thing is that it's really hard to, you have to be able to provide the resources and the services in order to create some kind of safety for trafficking victims to follow through with law enforcement. You know, there's not a lot of resources here, and you need support through that. But they're here. And those, you know, like I said, the hotspots, that came from law enforcement. So I don't know which police department said it's not happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I work with law enforcement. I work with PSP. So the state police, we go and I do a training with, you know, the human trafficking person there. And we do trainings to across the state, Pennsylvania State Police, mm-hmm. trainings to them. So there are trainings brought in, but I don't know how much trainings the other departments around here receive.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So like some departments just may not be as well versed as mm-hmm. say the state police or just another police department for that matter.
I don't know if they always know what they're looking for. And victims don't come in screaming, I'm a sex trafficker. They don't tell you that.
Right.
Sometimes I told you they don't even know because they think that they consented.
Right.
Or they think that they're in a relationship with that person and trying to explain to them if you're in an intimate relationship with somebody, they usually don't want you to be with somebody else. They don't normally sell you. You
right,
know,
yeah.
But they don't always see that because it's not clear because traffickers are really good at what they're doing and they look for the most vulnerable population. Many have a history of child sexual abuse, about 90%. I have not met one victim that did not have a history of child sexual abuse. I'm not saying there's not another 10%. I just haven't come across them. And then with that, you know, with the sexual abuse often comes maybe from dysfunctional families and unhealthy families and didn't have a lot of support growing up. Maybe you didn't come from anything. Maybe you grew up in drug addiction, whatever it might be. And they never really felt loved. So somebody finds that person that's not assertive, that doesn't feel love, I can come in and feel that need. Because I could tell you how special you are and how much in love I am with you and how I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to marry you. I'm going to do all this stuff. Or find an addict who's dope sick. And I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you some of this. I'm going to give you the drugs. And now you owe me. But you owe me a lot more than what that drug was worth. It doesn't make sense to us, but it makes sense to the victims. To the point that they're caught up in this and they have no idea. You know, when I said a homeless person, a place to stay, they look for somebody in poverty. You know, I can help you. I can give you a couple bucks. I can give you some money for your kids. I can help you pay that rent. Now you owe me.
But more. And then it's just a mm-hmm. rabbit hole and you basically don't ever mm-hmm. get out of it. How does somebody get out of it? I mean, besides like, you know, if they're arrested and maybe they finally speak up or they seek their own help. I mean, like what do you typically see when you come across a victim? Like what do you typically see? Do you typically see people coming more direct to you
they might go through law enforcement that we work with and the referral being made.
Which do you see more? Is it more people coming from law enforcement being
some will come from law enforcement, but some will come from us doing outreach at the higher risk populations, like the homeless shelter, like drug and alcohol, those places. And when we're in there talking about it, they're like, whoa.
Oh, so you go in and you do
it'll start talking about services and talking about sexual assault. And then I start talking about sex trafficking. I didn't do that 10 years ago, but now I just talk about, you know, what sex trafficking is. But not only for to get disclosures from victims, but also there's people that have been on the street. They saw it, but judging and not completely understanding what trafficking is. You know, nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about the age of entry into sex trafficking is 12 to 14, mostly females, although it does happen to males. Okay.
But when I think about mostly female, they didn't grow up and say, oh, this is what I want to do when I get big. That wasn't their dream. They had no idea, but they ended up there. You know, when I think about males, we have not had many males come forward. We've had a couple referrals, but when it comes to males, it's a little bit different. It's hard for, and it's not that it's easy for females, but I think the world is more accepting of things like that happen to females, more accepting of child sexual abuse happen to females, but there's not much difference. I mean, so if I say 1 in 4 girls are sexually abused, 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused, not much difference. So they're just as vulnerable.
So did you say, like a few minutes ago, did you say that you've never come across a victim that wasn't subjected to child sexual
didn't
abuse?
Doesn't have a history of some sort of sexual trauma as a child or teenager.
Everyone you've
seen? The one that I'm meeting with. Right, I'm not telling you that there's not some out there.
Right, right.
But the ones that I have met, at some point when I'm talking to them, I'll find out.
That was a commonality between.
Because I want to say, how'd you get here? And that's what I think society doesn't get. How do they get there? You know, and they are coming from that history of child abuse and not feeling loved. They are coming from that history of drug addiction. They are coming from that history of poverty, homelessness. You know, that's where they're coming from. And victims of domestic violence, because that's a whole different cycle to grow up in a family that doesn't really care about you and end up in a really unhealthy relationship.
There's just so much of this, you know, happening. And like, again, you're dealing with, again, a lot of other crimes. And again, I know probably most of the time today we're probably mostly talking about human trafficking. How big is your staff?
Not many. We serve 3 counties, and I think there might be 20 some of us. I don't know.
And serving 3 counties.
And
that's a pretty big population.
And that's not just counselors. I mean, that's administration, and that's our education people.
It's everything.
Yeah, it's everybody.
It's everything. So,
that's what we got total.
So you got 20 people serving this population in 3 counties. I mean, I don't know what the population is, but I know it's a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, 3 counties. What are the other?
Wyoming County is pretty quiet, small, you know, but it still has crimes.
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of domestic violence.
But again, like it's, you know, you're pulled in a million different directions. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, this is just one part of what you do. You know, so again, I mean, I know it's probably difficult, you know, because you can't just focus on one thing over the other.
No.
And it's like everything is probably the most important thing.
It is.
It's like, how do you manage all that? Like, you have a smaller team. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I know you guys can probably only handle so much, but you probably also only get so many referrals or requests or whatever. But do you struggle to keep up with it? Like, what's that like?
Some days are busier than others. And sometimes you have more phone calls. Sometimes you have more court cases to go to, or you get called out to the hospital, or you have a walk-in. But you're able to manage it. Well, I do. And I can kind of say, okay, I can't leave here without calling this person. I need to make sure I check on that person. You know what I mean?
That's a big responsibility.
It is.
How does that pressure, does that affect you?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's hard. I practice a lot of gratitude. I don't really complain about as much as other people do, because I'm like, whoa, you got a house to go home tonight and it's safe there. I know that sounds kind of silly, but not to somebody else. There's things that we take every single day for granted.
Yeah.
You know, if I was on the streets and broke down or whatever it might be, I've got a phone that 20 people would come and get me. Right. And some people have not one person they can call to help them get to one safe place.
That's crazy when you think about that.
So I try to practice the gratitude stuff. And like I said, and then just knowing that it mattered to this person what I did. It mattered to that person. Do you know what I mean? It helped in one way or another, whatever decision they made to do that night. You know, do I worry about some of them? Yeah. I'm going to know where they're at. Are you OK? Are you cold? But I can't tell you that doesn't pop into my head at night. You know, there's certain victims that are out there, and I'm like, where are you?
I wonder what they're doing.
You know, did you pick back up and you're afraid to call? Did you go back and you're afraid to go? Because I never want them to be afraid. It doesn't matter to me what you do. Just pick up the phone and call me. I'm not going to go. You're not going to be judged by me. You're not going to be in trouble by me. I just want you to pick back up the phone, because I'm still going to help you regardless of what situation you're in.
How do you handle that? If you get, you know, a call, like, again, like, they probably don't, you don't want to tip off the, what do you even call the person that is, I don't even know what to even call them, but like
the trafficking victim. You mean?
No, not the victim. Like the person that's trafficking them. Like, what do you call that person?
A trafficker.
Just the trafficker.
A lot of other things.
Right?
Yeah. We're staying with trafficker now.
We'll keep it PG.
Trafficker. Yeah.
We have a few other choice words. But so with the trafficker, like, mm-hmm. you know, how do you navigate that conversation? You know, again, like, let's pretend right now somebody's listening or watching this that is a victim of trafficking,
mm-hmm.
and How do you handle the situation so that not to alert the trafficker, so, you know, so the victim feels like safe coming to you? Like, how do, because obviously if the trafficker gets knowledge or gets word that you're involved or law enforcement or somebody's onto them, obviously that, you know, that could be bad for them. But, so yeah. how do you navigate mm-hmm. that situation?
I tell them different ways that, I mean, they can call our hotline 24/7 and there's somebody there. There's emails. You could leave a message on our website, on our webpage. There's things that you can do. But there's always somebody there you can tell. And nobody's going to make you or tell you that you need to call the police. You know, that there's different options. And when you're ready to call.
So, like, they're not going to get in trouble if they come for help.
Oh, absolutely not.
It could be a situation where, you know, somebody might be listening or watching right now, and they might be a victim, and they might be thinking, like, well, you know what, I think I'm ready to get help, mm-hmm. but they might be thinking, but you know what, if I try to go get help, maybe I'll get arrested. Maybe they've been arrested before and they don't want to be arrested again. Like,
our service at no cost, but they're confidential. And the confidentiality piece is really important. I cannot tell anybody, I can't tell law enforcement that somebody came in to talk to me because it's covered by confidentiality. Confidentiality was passed like back in 1970. It's been around, it's bigger than HIPAA. It says communication between a sexual assault counselor advocate and domestic violence counselor advocate is completely confidential. It means that somebody, you came in and somebody wanted your records, even with a subpoena. I can't give them out. Mm-hmm. You want me to testify? Not without a, you know, even with a subpoena, I can't do anything unless the victim signs. There's three exceptions. One, if you tell me that a child's being abused, I have to make a report. I'm a mandated reporter. Two, if I thought you were going to harm yourself. But you also have the plan and the means to do it. I've worked with lots of people that really sad and traumatic things happen to them. And I've heard people say, I don't want to go on. I can't do this anymore. I wish it was over. If they don't have the plan and the means to do it, I'm going to just keep talking to them. Everybody's afraid that if they come in and really share feelings, that they're crazy and then I'm going to 302 them. They're not. Okay. So I don't want people to be afraid of that. But if you tell me you got a plan and the means, then I will. And then if you're going to go commit a crime, don't tell me.
Yeah. Right.
Please don't tell me.
Yeah. Right. Right? Exactly.
So like
yeah.
those are the except, you're right. Yeah. And have I worked with people that have stole? Yeah. I'm not calling the cops because somebody stole something 2 years ago. I'm not doing anything with that. But if you hurt somebody, then I would be obligated to do something with that. If you're going to hurt somebody, I would be obligated. Other than that, you can come in and tell me whatever you want. I can't tell anybody.
You said typically the victim is usually, they become a victim, you said, between the age of, what was it, 12 and something or 14 and something?
Yeah.
Is when it kind of starts?
Yeah. And I'm not saying all the victims that are here, but they say the average age to entry across the whole world is 12 to 14.
12 to 14. That's crazy.
So it doesn't mean that the victims that I'm working with now were
sure.
engaged at 12 or 14, but some weren't.
In this area specifically, is it more, do you see more children? I'll say, like, you know, again, under 18, or is it more adult?
Here, it's more adults.
More adult.
I'm not saying the kids aren't here. I just haven't got a lot of the kids. I've got a few, mm-hmm. a couple teenagers that it happened to.
Do you go around to schools and like talk? Do you do
programs in the school? Okay. I don't. We have an education department that department that does that.
Okay, yeah. I don't know where. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure she said she saw. So a friend of mine, Janelle C, and she's a teacher at Wilkes-Barre School District, and I'm pretty sure when I shared the article, she. She said, like, she said, hey, I already kind of knew about you. And she was like, oh my God, Tammy's great. You should really have Tammy on. And
so yeah. I've gone to the schools to talk to when you said us going to the schools, we have education people that go and do programs to the classes. I've done trainings to teachers.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
I thought, yeah, no.
Yes, I have.
I thought that's what she said, but I couldn't remember. Yeah. But again, like you do go around to the schools, but to speak to and with. The faculty,
yeah.
right, and the
and
staff
do stuff
at the school
on human trafficking and mandated reporting, those kinds of things.
Is that something that the schools and I'm just curious, like for my knowledge or for anybody that wants to know, are schools reaching out to you to come talk? Are you reaching out to them? How does that work?
They are, because part of that started with the human trafficking task force. Okay, so there's all different committees, and there's people that are in education on there, and we said the way that we can start maybe lowering the risk of trafficking is by getting into the schools. If we can educate the teachers, and then maybe the teachers will let us come in and educate the high school kids. Maybe we could be doing programs on trafficking for them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the signs and the things to look for. And it's the things that we would talk to the teachers about. Again, a lot of times people are like teaching their kids not to talk to strangers. And when the majority of time when a child's been hurt, it's by somebody they know. You know, and it's the same thing about, they're afraid their kids are going to be abducted. Less than 5% of trafficking victims are abducted. And the majority of our kids are not abducted. Our kids go to them. They're on, you know, social media. They're talking to people they don't know. And people who are traffickers, you know, are pretty good with using the social media. They said since 2020, I think Facebook went up 125% in recruiting. And the other one is, I'm terrible with them, but Snapchat is another place where they recruit. You know, but Facebook, you think about it, people say all their stuff, you know, nobody cares about me. My boyfriend left me. I'm getting whatever it might be. People just share all that stuff.
And you can, so the
traffickers, else can swoop in. Yeah.
They go and find these people. That's what they look for.
And so when you're on those other, and I don't know enough about the games that kids play, but you know, they're on things and they're talking back and forth and they don't know
online
who they
gaming,
are.
Yeah.
You know, so somebody's saying that they're 15 when they're really 40.
Right.
You know, but they fill that need. They look for the kid that's vulnerable. Or maybe they do find the kid and kind of befriend them, and it's the kid that doesn't have a lot of money. And maybe it's the kid that's being teased. But they tell them how beautiful they are. And you know, and they buy them the iPhone, and they buy them the iPad, and their nails are done, and their hair is done, and they're buying the $500 sneakers. That's a big sign. Like, whoa, where'd that kid get all that money for that stuff?
That's sad. That's so sad. It's sad that, you know, I mean, not just with children. I mean, it's the whole situation, whether it's an adult or a child or not. It's like, it's almost unbelievable. And I know, and maybe that's why some people like don't think it's real, or I think maybe some people are still like in denial about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just because it's very hard to... It's very hard to like comprehend, like, first of all, how it even happens, that it's happening here in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. The fact that you said earlier, just like you said, we probably bump into people every day, whether we know them well or not, but we're probably coming into contact with people every day that are victims of trafficking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're in Dunkin' Donuts, they're over at Sheets buying a pack of small. Yeah, they're out because people see them as being tied up and locked in these rooms somewhere.
But they're not. They're really integrated in society.
They're controlled a different way.
Mm. And what are they? Like, what are some of those controls?
Some of the control is, it doesn't always have to be physical, but if, you know, I beat you the first time or come back and find you the first time, I don't have to say another thing. You're just going to keep coming back because you already know the consequences to it.
Right.
It may be holding the drugs. It may be saying, you're going to do what I told you to do, because if not, I know where your sister's at. I know where your daughter's at. That's a lot of control because they're good at getting information right from the very beginning.
And they use it against them.
You know, so if you and I just met somewhere outside and we were chit-chatting, and I might say, hey, Bill, where are you from? You tell me, you know, and then we start talking some more before I know it, you know.
You know, so, everything. Yeah.
Where'd you grow up at? You know, you got family still back in whatever town.
So you know how many family members they have.
But we do that. It's like normal.
Yeah,
it's a normal conversation.
Right.
And before you know it, I know all this stuff about you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're going to think now about me before you give that information.
Yeah, I'm not talking to anyone anymore.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's real easy to do
it
that.
It is. It's second nature. I mean, mm-hmm. nobody would think anything of it. You know, you're out, whether it's a restaurant or whether if you're in a line at like Sheets or if you're wherever, it's like, oh, hey, you know, like you just, it's just normal to make some, you know, lighthearted conversations with people. And it's crazy to think like it could be real simple. Fall right into that trap. Mm-hmm. That is just crazy.
And it's not like the assertive people or the people would support. They're not going to drag them in that way. But then there's other ways that they can drag them in. It's like you're in a relationship and, you know, and I'm not saying many or how often it happens, but people share photos back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit more power now that I got that over you.
Mm.
And I can share that with all your family members at Christmas if you don't do what I tell you to do.
Like, what else have you seen, like, with the victims? I mean, in terms of, like, you know, I mean, it'd be nice to hear a story of maybe somebody that was a victim that got help.
Yes,
especially through you.
And I have one that did. She, law enforcement helped. She went through the legal piece. There were consequences at the end. You know, somebody's in jail right now for that.
Like the trafficker?
Yep. She had been out on the streets herself. She ended up getting the services. You know, she went through the addiction pieces and did all this stuff. But through this, you have to support all the way through. But she's in a safe place. She has her own job. She has her own car. She made it. And she's clean for over 4 years.
That's great.
So that's a positive. I don't get anything else out of the whole deal. And I watch that. That's a blessing in my head. You know what I mean?
Makes it all worth it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So, and there's other ones. There's other ones that have gotten away and went further away, and I still can talk to them, you know, and they're safe, you know, and not all of them work through law enforcement, but maybe some of them got their kids back. Some of them worked on their addiction and they're self-sufficient now. So I have a couple of those stories too.
In terms of, like you said, like in that one instance, you know, there was an arrest made. How often are arrests made?
Not often.
And why is that? Not often.
Well, sometimes the victims don't come forward, and sometimes it's not always seen, and where the victims are actually the one being arrested for it. Do you know what I mean? They don't always see it. I think that law enforcement, and I won't give you the tips on that, but they're doing more and more trainings with it to say what to look for.
Okay.
What are we looking for here? What are the signs of that?
Because cause even if a victim did come forward and, like, say, go to the police, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they potentially may be arrested for their crime, but I'm just trying to think this out loud for a second. So like, mm-hmm. if, you know, you're a victim and you go to the police, whatever, and it's like, you go and you say, hey, this person is doing so-and-so to me. Like, what do the police do? Is it just kind of like hearsay, or do they have to have like, what do the police need to be able to go after?
They need to do all the interview and gather all the information.
So like, they just like open a case.
And they need some kind of evidence, so they would have to do that.
So like, there's nothing
they can do. There's specific law enforcement that do that across the state too.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean? That are specialized in doing that.
And that's more like state police, mm-hmm. not like the local, like,
yeah. I'm not saying yet that the local police still do it, but there are, you know, like specific people that you can reach out to and say, hey, I got somebody that might want to talk to you. It's longer than what we think. It's not like Law and Order, where I could say, okay, she told me this, I know where they live, and we're going to get them. It's a long process.
You know, yeah. What does that look like? What's that timeline?
Oh.
I imagine some are probably really long, some might
during
be short.
COVID, it was really even worse because the courts weren't open, you know, but—
Couldn't do anything.
Yeah, but you have to have everything lined up, but also you have to have a victim. You have to have a witness to this. Do you know what I mean? So if they aren't supported along the way, and that's why I work so much with law enforcement, is that we go hand in hand. I can't make arrests. I wish I could.
So would you be a witness? Is that how that
works?
No,
I wouldn't be a witness, but I would support that person so that they could get through the legal system to do what they need to do.
I see. Okay.
You know, but if you're afraid and you're not in a safe space and nobody's helping you deal with any of this stuff and you're not clean, it's not easy.
Yeah,
go throughout the whole legal process. But yeah. When you have a supported victim, you have a supported witness.
And then I imagine too, you know, the victims, a lot of times they also, you know, whoever they come forward to, you know, because again, alcohol, drugs, abuse, there's a lot going on, trauma, et cetera. I mean, you name
mm-hmm,
it.
Yeah.
We could probably go on and on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, if I had to guess, whoever that they're going to may not even believe them. Does that happen often too? Because it's like, oh, like this guy's a drug addict, you know, this girl's a drug addict, this guy, you know, whatever. Like, I'll say, you know, again, nothing against law enforcement.
This isn't
a negative towards law enforcement too. But do you see often that, you know, a lot of times that anyone who they're going to, besides you, because obviously you guys, you know, this is not all you do, but mm-hmm. you know, you can understand it more,
right.
I'll say, than a typical law enforcement officer, mm-hmm. even though they're being trained and I'm mm-hmm. sure there's a lot of education mm-hmm. going on. But like, does that happen a lot?
Where they're not seen sometimes, maybe not so much not believe, but not seen.
Yeah.
They're not seeing it, you know, and it's, and maybe somebody came in high as a kite and wasted. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Are you going to hear, or somebody with mental health, because those are the great victims. Do you know what I mean? They're easy to traffic.
Sure.
And nobody's listening. Do you know what I mean? And society's not listening. They're just a bunch of addicts.
Yeah. And what do you say when society's not listening? Like, what does that?
They see it in their own way, but they judge. They judge because they don't understand.
It's like, oh, you're crazy. Or, oh, you're a drug addict.
Yeah. And you went there.
And they just get dismissed. Is that what it is?
Because we blame the victims no matter what it is. Somebody gets sexually assaulted. What were you wearing? Why were you talking to him? How many drinks did you have? Why'd you get in the car?
Why do we do that?
Yeah. Society blames for everything. You know, if your purse is stolen, why'd you leave your purse in the car? Whatever it might be. We do that because it's a false sense of self-security. I wouldn't go to that bar. I wouldn't have been drinking. I wouldn't have wore that. I wouldn't have left my purse in the car. My kid wouldn't have been there.
Just because you wouldn't do that doesn't mean that person
would. But therefore, it won't happen to me.
Oh, I see. So most
people.
But
none of us are exempt of any crime.
Yeah. So most people have that attitude of like, ah, well, I won't. That'll never happen to me. I'll never be put myself in that position.
Mm-hmm. So if I could put the blame on you, then it doesn't put me at risk because I don't do that. And they're really good at that. We blame. And it's like we say so much like, why did she do this? Why did she get in the car? Whatever it might be. But, you know, victims of domestic violence, why should go back? She must really like it. Why doesn't anybody say, why does he hit her? You see, we blame and blame and blame the victim that they don't even come forward. You know, when hashtag MeToo came out, I don't remember what year it was. But in the first 24 hours, over a million people said hashtag MeToo. If I tell you one in four girls are sexually abused, one in six boys are sexually abused, one in four women are victims of rape, one in 33 males are victims of rape. We all know somebody who could say hashtag MeToo. But the world roared. What a bunch of liars. They're only after money. Why'd they wait so long to tell? All they're saying is it happened to them. They don't want nothing from that. And no wonder everybody keeps their mouth shut.
Yeah.
Because they're in the room listening to that. You're going, that's why I didn't tell nobody.
Yeah, because then they just get criticized.
Yeah. So we don't tell. And sometimes that happens in people that are supposed to be providing services too, that don't always understand.
What is the, you know, the future of this look like? Like, you know, what are you working on? Like what, you know, is there, you know, obviously, you know, you just came from something today. I mean, you were at something right before this, a seminar, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what else is maybe upcoming? Like what else is, you know, is Victim Resource Center doing to try to combat this?
I think more and more outreach, continue doing programs out in the community. The Human Trafficking Task Force are doing things to get more things done in school so that maybe we can, you know, help a kid or two. And I'm hoping that, I mean, with that meeting today, there was couple attorney generals there and, you know, Shea Rhodes from Villanova. I'm hoping they change some of the laws and really, really focus on working on the buyers, because I'm going to go back to that.
Yeah, what are the laws? Like, what are you looking
for
them to
change? Well, there's buyers beware and we can make an arrest, but and they could be fined. But this, it's a slap on the wrist. So let's think about this for a second. I steal something at Walmart. I get a retail theft. It's a misdemeanor. I steal something the second time. It's a misdemeanor. I steal something from the Dollar Tree for the third time. It's a felony and I'm going to jail. But if you're a buyer and you go, the first time it's a misdemeanor, second time it's a misdemeanor, third time it's a misdemeanor, 100th time. We haven't changed
any of that. How is it only a misdemeanor?
That's what it is. I didn't make that law. I really wouldn't
change it.
I just want them named publicly too. I'm like, I think it'd be a little bit different. You might think twice if you know that somebody's going to put your name in the paper. Back in the day, which was wrong, and they would call them prostitutes, they would put the prostitutes' names in the John's name. How about we just put the buyer's names in? How about put their picture up on social media? I would love that.
Yeah.
That would be a deterrent to me. But for I want them to be charged, because what they get is that slap on their wrist for the third time is like me driving without a license. You could buy somebody or I could drive without a license. It's the
crazy.
Same consequences.
It's so crazy.
Yes.
I know. I can't even comprehend how there's such
sometimes.
Little how there's such little recourse for committing this crime. I mean, it's pretty serious.
It is a serious crime as far as I'm concerned.
It's very serious.
And
it's very
sexual
serious.
Assault. You shouldn't be able to buy people.
No.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. If I get anything else to change before I ever retire or get out of this position, I want the buyers publicized
and
arrested.
Yeah.
Because there was a law that was called buyers beware. And they were changing some of this stuff. And I'm really terrible with keeping up to it because I just want them arrested. But some of the fines was supposed to go into the trafficking so that trafficking survivors have access to resources, because there's not a lot of resources for them. Like, we don't have a shelter.
What do you guys do?
Beg and borrow, call places. I'm a pain. I'm going to be honest. I'm a pain. I will call over and over again. And if I have your name and you helped me before, I got your little.
I'm on the list now, huh?
You're on the list.
That's okay.
Call Bill.
That's right. You can call me.
But I'm just saying, like, I would call for those resources. And then there's people I just know in drug and alcohol. And I could call so-and-so and go, listen, I need somebody right now will go in. And she'll help me get them in right then. Like, I don't have to go through all these phone numbers. I'm going right to her. I have a couple places that will take victims, and I'll call right there, and I'll ask them, can you help me with this? And they will. But we need more resources. You know, we need more job, like, because they don't have jobs. They don't have houses. They don't have, and we already have an issue with all of that right here.
Yeah, so once you kind of get somebody to come in, wants the help, you get them the help, and there's really nothing to really, like, kind of integrate them back into society.
You need to become self-sufficient again.
Right?
So hopefully I find them programs where they will be taken into, and like a residency that will give them the opportunity to go back to school or help them get a job.
And there's nothing and like that now?
Right? No, I have nothing.
Nothing. How do we change that?
I guess we need more resources and more money.
Do you have like an idea of like another organization that you might be able to partner with that could help? Like, do you need funding? Do you need lawmakers involved? Like, what do you need right now? Like, if you had a magic wand, what do you need?
I want, when I find a trafficking victim, I don't have to put them in a hotel until I can find them shelter, because I'm putting them right back into probably where they're trafficked. Maybe not at that hotel, but a different
one.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We need more and more resources. And I don't think it's going to catch on until people really believe that it's really here and that there's more and more trafficking victims, you know?
What would it take? Like, what is it going to take for... I don't even know who is going
to... I think it's money and somebody to run it, because it's extensive. I think that there's some houses in different places that are being built outside of the area, you know, and they're more long-term. If I could have anything, it's something short-term so I can get them away from here and where they need to be.
Like a shelter.
Because you could have a shelter here, but it's really hard to go back out in the community here again.
Right.
Because too many people know you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just easier if you don't live here anymore. So right here would be a nice place just to get somebody safe right now, until I can get you to where you need to be.
Are there any specific organizations or people that you can think of that, you know, that might be able to help you?
Well, there's sexual assault centers across Pennsylvania, and then there's domestic violence centers across Pennsylvania, and they have shelters. Human trafficking and domestic violence are not the same thing, although it can be similar. There's still a different thing, so sometimes you can't put all those victims together. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just need one specific thing, and there are big places. Like, there's places, the Dream Center in Arizona, there's Thistle Farms out in Tennessee. And they're amazing, and people stay there for a long, long time, and they...
And what are these?
They're human trafficking. I don't want to call them the right things. It's not like the shelter, but it's like...
Like a big property?
It's a big property, yeah, that they go and they...
Wow.
They can stay. Yeah. And they have, they help them get jobs and they help them get schooling and they help them work their drug, like everything. It's like one stop shop.
Can somebody from here go there? Like, how does that work?
They could.
Like,
I have to get them there. But okay. Yeah, they could. Yeah. So I have some contacts at those places. I could.
And like, how is it funded? Like, so say you had somebody, like, do you have to then pay for that individual to go there? Like, how does that work?
Well, I don't think they're going to pay for it. So I'm going to try to figure something. I'm going to find more resources because I'm an advocate. And so I have somebody that will help me with transportation, not in our agency, but another place.
Once they're there, like, is it free to be there?
They're just taking them.
So you just need the cost just to get them there.
Yeah. Okay, if they're willing to go there, yeah.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not that much then, right? Like, you know, I mean, obviously cost of travel, like it's not crazy expensive. I was thinking like maybe there'd be like a $50,000 a year, you know, type thing to stay, kind of like a, you know, I mean, I just think of like a rehab, like I know rehab is like super expensive I'm not trying to say this is a rehab, but
I know it's everything. I mean, many of them have addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, but you don't have to have addiction, but they would have addiction.
But they would have
there.
That. Okay.
They would have schooling. They would have resources, you know, to help you get into jobs. They're going to have resources to help you get housing. They're going to help you, you know, hopefully legally, if you had some kids, they might help you get the legal resources that you need. But it is tough because I tell you why they can't always stay in this area. I got a call one time and it was from a Philadelphia shelter. And she specifically asked for me. And she said, you know, it's not safe here. I can't go out because the traffickers are outside. I can't leave because they're right outside the door. You know, and I'm talking because I'm not understanding how she got my name, but my name goes around sometimes.
Yeah.
And she had my card,
yeah.
Which was great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to help her, give her some resources, give her some ideas. And I call her the next day. She goes, oh, you remembered me, because I'm wondering how many phone calls did this poor woman make that she's shocked that I call her back. But I did make some phone calls. And the last time I talked to her, she actually called me when she arrived. But I call her again. And she goes, I'm almost there. So she made it out of state. She got on the bus and she's okay, as far as I know. I haven't heard from her in a little bit, but she called me from the facility she was at and said, I made it. I'm all right. And thank you.
Wow.
But nobody listened to her. Like, you shouldn't have to call me from several counties away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And maybe somebody heard something on TV or I don't know.
If anyone's listening and watching right now and if it's somebody that whether they don't think this exists or whether they think it's not that big of a problem, like, what message do you have, like, to share with, and again, anyone, whether they know a little bit, nothing, or a lot? Like, what would you say to anyone right now, to bring some awareness to the situation?
I would say, I know it's really hard. Some of the stuff I talked about, it's hard to believe that it's happening here. I wish it wasn't happening here, but it is here, and I know that the things that I tell you and the things that I share are not from reading a book. It's because I'm interacting with people every single day. And more people we can work on being safe if we judge less and just try to understand. And lucky for you if you don't understand it. But there's people that come from all different walks of life and they feel alone and they're already berated and put down and not believed by enough people. If we could just be supportive and maybe just send them my way. And that's all that you need to do is just believe and not judge.
It's actually more simple than most people realize. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, everybody's judged somebody at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've all done that. And I'm not going to sit here and say, like, you know, we've never done that. But I just think people just need to, like, open their eyes and their brain a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just listen. Like you said, just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, why, you know, it boggles my mind why anyone would challenge this, like, right, as if it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Why? Why would anyone do that?
Because wants to believe. We want to believe that this community's safe.
Yeah.
And for some people, it is safer. And we don't walk that life.
Right.
We don't want gangs to be in Luzerne County, but they are.
Right.
We don't want drug dealers in Luzerne County, but they are.
It's just a reality.
We don't want people using overdosing, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the only way to combat that is by the awareness and supporting. You don't have to know what to say to a victim. You could say, I'm really sorry it happened. Call Tammy. Right? I don't expect you to do my job. I don't want you to do my job. It's simple as making a referral, but not saying, what a liar, and you put yourself into that position. And no wonder. I'm not surprised it happened to you, because this is all you ever do, is make poor choices. You know, don't shut people down. Just send them my way. You don't even have to say anything other than, I'm sorry, call Tammy.
And why even do that to somebody? Like, why even make anyone feel that way?
But you know, people do.
They're at, like, the lowest of the low of their life. Like,
I know.
God, just get them some help.
And then,
like,
we wonder why it's so easy to control somebody. I didn't mean to cut you off, it's easy to control somebody that way.
Yeah.
Easy for somebody to swoop in and be Prince Charming.
Yeah. So, all right. So your biggest problem is resources.
Mm-hmm.
What, is there anything else? I mean, I'm sure there's obviously more and more, but like the resources is like your number one.
Yeah, because there's layers upon layers of trauma on top of that and all the things that they do need in the therapy on top of it, in the counseling. And if they go throughout the legal system, it means accompaniment. Do you mean they need clothes? They need food.
Do you take donations for stuff?
We don't always have a place to store that, but there are places that I will call. Like Dress for Success, they'll give me some clothes.
Okay.
Some of the churches will give me some clothes. We have a food pantry for our clients that come in, so I have access to food. I could call CEO because I know somebody over there. I know somebody at different places that would help me.
So they kind of, you kind of help each other out.
Yeah, I could find resources. I call them, hey, I need this. And somebody will come up with it.
Like if there's anyone, you know, like me or anyone else that is, you know, that listened to this, well, hopefully they made it this far and, you know, watched this whole thing. But, you know, how can, if there's, say, somebody like me wanted to get involved and help in some way, like what would you suggest?
I mean, you can call and talk to me. I mean, my phone number, my email, my access, you can call me and we could just kind of see what you want to do and where I can, you know, what would be, what skill or what you have that might benefit in some way, and I can lead you to that.
So like, is there like, you know, again, like, you know, you look at a lot of nonprofits around and everybody takes volunteers, like everybody always needs volunteers, right? You know, and in this situation, it might not be, you know, so much it's a little different. It's a little different, right? So I'm just trying to help people understand like how they might be able to help you and your organization help the victims.
But all right, one of the things is reaching out. If you have a community, you know, that you're a part of a club or a group or a church or whatever, and you want to know more about this, I'll be glad to come and talk to you.
Oh, I see.
It's education and it kind of spreads the word. That's some of the things that they can do. They want to learn more about what they could do with their kids. You know, call their school, have us come in and talk about child safety with them. And volunteers, they're great. But because of our confidentiality setting, I can't have anybody in there, and unless you took the confidentiality in order to actually become a volunteer, it's a lot about. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I can't just say, "Here's your week. Yeah. Now go ahead."
Yeah. Right.
No.
Yeah. Here's a badge. You're on board. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Well, no, it's good. It's good to hear that there are ways, you know, for people to get involved. And obviously, like I said, I've had as I was right before it, and or even when I reached out to you, like I said, because of my post that got, it did get a lot of engagement on Facebook, and I had a lot of people that, you know, again, mentioned your name and what you're doing. It's working, right? So I just want to say, like, you know, whatever you're doing, you're doing a pretty good job at it. Because again, I think you're finally getting, you know, the attention that you deserve. I mean, I think you should still get more attention. It's nice to see that people are finally paying attention.
They are.
You know, and this was one of these topics that I've been meaning to. I've never had this conversation. I've done, you know, this episode is, you know, I'm nearing 250 episodes over the course of 5 years. I can't even believe it's been that long. And this, I've never, out of all of these episodes, I've never, you know, had this conversation specifically. So it was great to finally be able to, you know, again, I haven't followed it as much as I, you know, started to recently, right? But, you know, I've always been, I'll say, aware of it. And, you know, I'm somebody who believes that, and again, it's a problem. And there's nothing wrong. Like, again, like back to people thinking like, oh, well, that doesn't exist in my town. It's like, stop acting like that. Like, it, you know, shit happens. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's crime. There's all kinds of things that go on. And whether you want to, I mean, it happens. And I think people just need to stop, you know, just being in such denial for whatever reason and just open their eyes to it. And just, and like you said, just be aware. Mm-hmm. Just listen. It's great to know. I'm sure. Hopefully after this, maybe somebody will see this and maybe want to have you come speak.
Okay. Yep.
I'm sure I can probably make some connections for you too. But great to, you know, even though this conversation I'll say is like obviously a more serious one, it could be somber, you know, or traumatic, whatever it is, you know, for some people. But I think it's real important. And I think it's real important to continue the conversation. And God love you. I mean, what you do. I mean, it's a lot.
It is sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it takes a very special person, I think, to do what you do. So I give you a lot of credit for that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, like I said, even though this was a very serious conversation to have, I think it was educational, and I think people, you know, hopefully people learned something from it today. I mean, I definitely learned a lot more about it myself. There's still obviously more to learn, and it's not something that'll ever just be like, oh yeah, we know everything about it. I know it's probably gonna, you know, change and evolve right over time as everything does. And, it's nice to see that, you know, an organization like you, out there, you know, trying to help these people, because it's like you said, it's way more common than we think or that we realize. Mm-hmm. And it's, right in front of us every day.
It is.
It's scary.
It is.
Yeah. I'm going to continue to follow, you know, your story and all this. And I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to just do more good in our community. So
okay.
I appreciate you coming on. Tammy Burke, this is On the Stacks in the Loop Internet Studio. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.